Folks, to the Mastermind of the Grind Block Talk Radio Show. We're supposed to be waiting on the kings of the literary Kings of Lit, sponsored by Only God Publishing. I don't know what happened to them. I guess today's show will be canceled. All right. Give me a moment, folks.
So I said this rhyme I'm about to say. The rhyme was Mecca and then it went this way. Recollect a Mecca mic check on a windmill skill. Mac is best wearing Godfather hats. It's okay to parlay the 4K better. Tell her my nigga need a sweater tougher than leather. Swing another Bobby King thing and I wreck. But just like the white one, I get no respect. Money stay awake cause the other niggas are fake. From Hollis to the Beacon, know your dumb ass is leaking. CL and 1DMC, so rush it. Big time way before him, I got to touch it. Remember the faces in all types of places. Look, ma, no shoelaces. And I'm
down with the team.
right, all right. I would like to welcome our listeners to the Mastermind of the Grind Block Talk Radio Show. And I am author Andre James, head mastermind of the grind and author Before His Time, A Murder Words in Your Mind Like It's a Crime, and If You a Hater, I Don't Mind Saying Step Behind. For all of y'all that don't know, the Mastermind of the Grind Block Talk Radio Show is associated with the Facebook group of the same name. This Facebook group is where I allow literary professionals of all types to promote their work as much as they like. I encourage readers to join the group so they can discover what's hot off the presses and support these hardworking authors. Now, as we prepare to meet our first guest in the house, we got Mr. Author Clever Black. Oh, yeah. Clever Black.
Yo, yo, what's going on, man? What's happening, Andre?
Oh, man, just chilling, Clever Black. Now, for all y'all don't know, Clever Black is a friend of the show, so this interview is going to be extremely fun and relaxing. So, Clever Black, just kick up a chair, grab a beer, and by the time we finish, you're out of here. Fair enough?
Let's do it, man. I got me a glass of rum. I'm good to go.
Let's go. I was checking out your bio, right? And it mentioned you were part of Hurricane Katrina. What was that experience like? Because, I mean, you know, I've heard a lot about it through the news, but to actually speak to somebody that was actually there, I've never done that. So tell me something about that.
Well, for us, man, you know, we left Sunday. Sunday right before the storm.
And, okay.
We wasn't caught up in it. You know, we left. One thing I could say, I remember leaving out, and my wife at the time, she was going through the house, and she was unplugging, like, you know, the TV and things like that, the stereo. And I just remember saying to myself, you know, I don't know why you're doing that anyway, because I was going to be underwater. And I had no idea how much I was dead on, but I never expected. I'm expecting, you know, 2 or 3 feet. So we had 15 feet of water in the place where we were staying. You know, I mean, we got wiped out completely, lost everything, you know.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, my uncle and them, they got holed up. You know, they had somewhere around the same amount of water, around 17 feet of water. They had to move up to a two-story home. You know, and they had to camp out there for 3 days before they was able to get up out of there. You know, so but for us, the experience, man, it was mostly driving, you know. And ironically, we find ourselves over in Selma, Alabama.
Okay,
a couple
like
of
the
days
movie.
There. Yeah, like the movie. We wind up over there, and we roll Highway 80, cross over to Montgomery, wind up here in Charlotte, North Carolina. I've been here ever since.
Okay, so you like Charlotte?
Yeah, man. When you know, it's good as far as educational wise, and I can say that the citizens are much different, you know, than compared to back home. I've been exposed to a lot of different things for the better out here. I remember when we first got here, when we left New Orleans at the time, they had like 176 murders, you know, and we got here and they only had 48, you know, and that was in August. I mean, and the people here was outraged. I never heard people talk that over 48 murders. And my family was thinking, like, shit, y'all should be happy. I mean, y'all got a break at 48, you know. So, yeah. It's a different lifestyle, man, but I enjoy it.
I want to touch on that, too, because, you know, you also mentioned in your bio how you had a lot of friends that perished in the streets, and you survived. You know, I think we have that in common because I had that same experience where, you know, a lot of my friends that I grew up with were either dead or in jail. Everybody.
Yeah.
Except for me and maybe one other dude.
Yeah.
And I grew up in New York. So you know how big New York is? You know,
mm-hmm.
Everybody getting murdered or in jail? It's crazy like that.
Yeah.
So tell me about your experience, though.
Growing up down there?
Yeah.
Growing up in New Orleans, man. Well, you know how it was. You kind of take to the streets at a young age, you know. I mean, I was a thief early on, me and my cousin, man, 8, 9 years old, he's still hot wheel cars, you know, but I just figured, you know, hey, that's just being a kid. We used to walk up to Kmart, you know, still cars, bikes. I wasn't really much about that. And in 1986, I was about 13 years old, and that's when I first saw a crack house. I didn't know what it was, man. These guys come through with their fancy cars and everything and, you know, put up a basketball goal. Next thing you know, they got people all over the place. We hanging out, you know, everything was good until the bullets start flying, you know. I mean, what's this? That's, you know, because I had never really been exposed to that. But them, you know, okay. Just seeing them cats, man, that kind of changed the game for me. And from that point on, I say from the age of 13 was when I became introduced to the streets and had the understanding that, you know, you can die doing these things, you know. And I speak on that, say, once we got started, you know, we came of age, and all them boys, you know, they wound up dying or going to jail, and it was just like a natural process for us because we used to hang around them, you know.
Right, right.
Kind of took over their position. Then it was something that was under us. The thing was, them young cats that was under us was wild, more wild than what we were, you know.
I hear
so
that.
Now you got these cats 14, 15 years old pushing Cadillacs and everything, man, but they was living so fast. I mean, and they died the same way, you know, young cats,
okay.
Man, 14, 15 years old.
Now, I'm asking you, how old were you when you finally decided to straighten out?
I was around, I'll say 19, you know. I kind of started early, man. I started backing away. I backed out, tried to get a job, you know, and, man, that didn't, you know, there wasn't many opportunities down there, you know.
Okay.
So you dabbled in, dabbled out, and I wound up taking a job over at a college, which was where I met my wife, man. And she was a lifesaver. She was a few years older than me, and she was in college at the time. She had her own place, you know, had a five-year-old daughter, so it kind of put a responsibility on me, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah,
from there, I wound up over in Pensacola, Florida, after we got married, you know. We wound up moving out of town. And after that, man, it just died down, you know. Our marriage got kind of rocky, and she went back home. By now, I had a son. Didn't want to be away from my son, and we moved back down there, like, in 2001. And we did pretty good right up until the hurricane.
I hear you. Yeah, I mean, I kind of had the same upbringing. You came out the streets a little younger than I did. I think I was about 21 when I finally decided to go to the military. But, you know, it was like, and I grew up in a house, believe it or not. And still, because I was in Jamaica, Queens, where everybody was like, that was doing something was drug dealing. So it was like, I was, you know, persuaded to go towards that life. I didn't even think about the fact that, you know, I was in a house. I didn't have to live in the projects. And, you know, my mom didn't really show me what it was to have a nice bank account, to, you know, and all that type of stuff. She didn't speak to me about the financial things. So I wasn't even thinking along that. What I was thinking about when I saw financial was I saw the bling, the big dookie ropes, the fancy cars. People was driving BMWs and, you know, all that type of stuff, Mercedes, and I wanted to be down with that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But,
you know, a lot of times you do those things, and like you said, that's what you see. You know what
right,
I'm saying?
Exactly.
So you want to put those things into your life because that's what everybody's doing. But
exactly.
When I was... like I said, so I was a thief. I kept getting into trouble, man. I moved from stealing bikes to stealing cars. And I remember I got caught one time stealing a car and had a court date come in and got caught again before I even made that second court date. I mean, that first court date. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And from there, man, I said, I got to make a change. I mean, I'm stealing. I ain't getting nothing out of this. I went to Mississippi, and that was the first time we stayed on the outskirts, right on a mile from Hines County, which was where Jackson, Mississippi is located. So I went to a different school. And that was the first time I came into contact with white people, man, at the age of 15. That was the first time. You know, I went to a a predominantly white school, so that was another eye opener for me. And this school had, they had computers, you know, they had like an art class, you know, and things like that. So I kind of, and the teachers really, they taught, you know, it was much different from what the high school I was going to in New Orleans. But I wound up, you know, I got out there, I joined the gang, you know.
Right.
The Folk Nation started running with them for a while, and got into that, man, and I feel, okay, I'm ready. I went back to New Orleans, jumped right back into the game, and was worse off the second time, you know.
Yeah.
But having that experience, that different experience, and seeing how other people live, I went into the game. I'm saying that all that to say I went into the game with a conscience of I knew right from wrong, you know what I'm saying? And that kind of helped me. I think that kind of helped me navigate through. I mean, like when if they go and do something, you know, the crew go and do something, and I felt, man, I might not make it out of that. You know what I'm saying? I let them go ahead and do that because I ran with the gang and seen how they operated and made moves and things like that. So a lot of things I did was intentional. A lot of things right. that people around me did was reactionary, just going with the flow of things. You know, I think
right,
having
right.
that thinking ability, man, is what helped me.
Right. Yeah. See, that's a problem too, to be able to think, because I think that's where I messed up too and whatnot. Because back in the days when I was running with these drug dealers, you know, and I was dealing with like big player cats, you know what I mean? Dudes that was millionaires
yeah.
owning restaurants and all that type of stuff. And this dude act like he didn't recognize who I was and whatnot. He wanted to act like he was tough, you know? And I shot him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it wasn't that.
Yeah.
He was acting tough or nothing like that. I felt like I was disrespected because he didn't recognize me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? It was all some
mm-hmm.
crazy young boy stuff. You know what I mean? I was
yeah.
young and dumb.
Yeah.
So, you know, after I did that, and did a little time, and I came out and went to the military. You know, that's when I straightened out. You know what I mean? The military
yeah.
really put a little something in my life, man, that, you know. And I was always a Christian, too, and whatnot, but being in the streets, you know?
Yeah.
In the streets. I was raised in the church, but I was still in the street. So, but eventually, you know, if you lead a child, you know, in the right way, he'll come back to it. And that's what
yeah.
I did now.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But let's get back to this. How does it feel to you to be nominated as an OG Publications King of Literature?
And it's an honor, you know. It's an honor, man, just to get the recognition as a I started out self-publishing, you know, and I'm signed to Wright House Publishing now, but most of my books are self-published. I only did two under that label, you know, the other eight I've done myself, and I'm believing that that's where most of the accolade is coming from, that Highland Family Saga series, and
okay.
I'm humbled by it, man, just to get the recognition. I'm humbled by it, you know.
Okay, and that's you do Clever Black Books, right?
Right. That's my publishing company where I self-publish my own books.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you. You self-publish your own books. You don't have people submit books to you, do you?
No, I just do my own thing because I have a particular fan base. You know what I'm saying? That read my books, and a lot of authors come into the game and they had this. Like they're gonna be an overnight success, but it don't happen. Like I'm going into my third year now. You know, it takes time really to come along. You know what I'm saying? And some people been in 5-10 years before they reach the level of success that they actually trying to attain. So I really don't wanna start out and have people disappointed, you know what I'm saying, because they don't do a certain amount of expected sales. I mean, I'm satisfied with my numbers and my numbers grow with each book. But for somebody
right.
new to come out, you know, I'm not sure that I can give them the success that they're expecting out the gate.
Right. I see what you're saying. You don't want to let nobody down.
Right.
I got
right.
you. Well, before you go, do you have any advice you can give our upcoming as well as struggling authors?
I always say stay true to yourself, you know. Coming out, most people write, they write what they know, and that's reflected in part one of the Highland Family Saga. You write what you know. I wrote about my environment. But as time goes on, you know, they start continue writing and work on that craft and write what comes to mind, even if you have to do research on it, you know, because after a while you're going to run out of writing on what you know and it's going to start to become repetitive. So always challenge yourself. You know, that's
right.
My advice. Always challenge yourself and never give up. You know, you're going to get those bad reviews, take those in stride. Don't bash the reader. It's their opinion. You know, learn from it and get better.
That's true. All right, well, that brings us to the end of our interview. Clever Black, thank you for being a part of the Mastermind of the Grind Block Talk radio show, and congratulations on your nomination. All right?
All right, thank you.
All right. Next up, we're going to have our author, Mike Warren. Mike Warren, where you at?
Yo, Andre, what's going on, bro?
What's going on, man?
Hey, you got it, man. You got it. I was just listening to the interview. I thought it was great.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. One of the things I want to speak to you about is you recently published a book under your own umbrella, Mike Warren Publishing, in May 2014. Were you just
I published three books under my publishing company in 2014.
Oh, my goodness. You're doing it. I like that. I love it. You're coming out like
hey,
a
you
bitch.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do, man.
All right. Now, let me ask you, will you just be publishing your own books, or are you accepting submissions?
I will accept submissions at some point. I haven't as of yet because
okay.
I'm not finished with my stories. You know,
okay.
Once I have what I want out there, then at that point in time, I will accept submissions. You know, but I was listening to Clever. And, you know, I know that whole idea of not wanting to disappoint people, but I think that if you start to accept submissions and publish other people's books, you know, you need to be upfront with them and let them know. Because like Clara said, you know, you're not going to reach that overnight success, you know, in one
right.
book or two books or three books. You know, they have to understand that, you know, it does take time, you know, so I think as long as they know that in advance, you know, then things should be fine. You know what I mean? You know, they just need to know in advance. So as long as you let them know up front, hey, look, you know, it's going to take time. You know, you got to get your name out there. People have to know who you are and what your writing style is all about.
Okay. Sound very intelligent, my brother. Very intelligent. That's that master's degree coming out. I see it.
well, my mama would be proud.
No doubt. You've been extremely successful publishing numerous books with life-changing books publications. What made you decide to strike out on your own?
Well, you know, when I started, I started writing professionally back in 2006. And my
right.
first book, A Private Affair, came out in 2007. And at the time, you know, I thought I needed to have a publisher. You know, during that time, there wasn't a whole lot of people talking about, you know, their own publishing companies, you know, publishing their own books, you know, being able to go on Amazon or Creative Space or whatever and put your book there and, you know, it wasn't as relevant as it is today. So,
right.
you know, again, I had happened to run into someone who was an author for life-changing books. And, you know, his name was Jay Trimble. I don't know if you know him, but he's from D.C. His name is Jay Trimble. Anyway, you know, I spoke with him, and, you know, I let him read some of my manuscript. One thing led to another. He submitted to his publisher, which was Life Changing Books, and, you know, they accepted my book, and I was grateful. That went on for a couple of years because I did four books with them, A Private Affair, the sequel is Sweet Swagger, the trilogy is Sir, Yes, Sir. Now, the fourth book was a separate standalone book called Just Make Him Beautiful. You know, but since that time, you know, I kind of felt as though they were doing, I could do myself.
Okay.
And what has happened is that because of the economy and because so many bookstores were closing, you know, well, let me go back. First, I believe that, you know, a lot of people try to get publishers because publishers can get your book out there from the standpoint of it being nationwide. You know,
right.
As a writer, you know, you can't, you know, hop on a plane and go to California or go to Chicago or go to New York or any of these places, you know, to represent yourself and do book signings because you still got a 9-to-5 job and you can't afford to do that. So when
right.
you have a publisher and a publisher can put your book out there and get it into the bookstores, that I thought was what I needed in order to get my name and my work out there. And now
okay.
that they've done that, you know, and because of how things have changed, because of so many bookstores closing down, you know, Books a Million, Borders, you know, your mom and pop bookstores, you know, Urban Knowledge bookstores, you know, a lot of these bookstores have closed down, and so many people are relying on going on Creative Space or Amazon, you know, to buy
right.
your book, whether it's paperback or ebook. You know, I thought, well, wait a minute. Hey, I could do that myself. Why am I going to let a publisher do it, you know, charge $15 a book, and with that $15 a book, I might get $1.25. That's BS. You know what I'm saying? That's BS. You know, I can do it myself and make it all for me. So in 2014, that's what I decided to do.
I hear you. I think that was my main reason for self-starting, self-publishing too, because I'm kind of greedy. I can't see myself putting in all the work and somebody else getting all the money. I can't see that.
You know, and the thing is that I know, you know, the publishing companies, what they do is that, you know, they will buy a cover for your book. You know, they will hire an editor to edit your book. They will give you an ISBN, you know, and all that. But even though they pay this money up front, for them to take more than 85% of the sales of your book, I think that's effed up. You know, I'm trying to keep my religion here, and I'm trying not to use profanity. But I think that in a situation like that, you know what it is? It's like I'm being pimped. You know, publishers are the pimps, and writers, we're the hoes. Okay, you know, and I don't like that. I can pimp myself. Okay, I don't need anybody to pimp me. I can do that myself.
I hear you. Wow, I've never heard it put that way, quite that way. But that's very good, and you're telling the
truth.
It's true.
And if you know publishers, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah. I see in your bio that you're a very educated young man, and I'd like you to tell our listeners more about that and tell me if it has helped you as far as your writing.
Well, I mean, you know, basically I grew up in the ghetto, I guess like everybody else. And, you know, in trying to get myself out of the ghetto, I mean, I was listening to you and I was listening to Clever, you know, talk about how you guys grew up and, you know, hanging around with drug dealers and stealing, you know, cars and bicycles and Hot Wheels and, you know, all of that, you know, I didn't grow up that way. Even though I grew up in the ghetto of Baltimore City, I didn't really grow up that way. I was kind of sheltered from a lot of stuff, you know, and I knew that as I was growing up, I never wanted to live in the ghetto. You know,
right.
I knew that in growing up, you know, by getting a job, even if my whole paycheck had gone to renting or buying a home, you know, that was more upscale, I was willing to do that because I didn't want to live in the ghetto. So,
right.
You know, the way that I found myself out is that I went into the military. At 18, I went into the military. And during that time, that was under the OGI Bill. So when I came out of the military in 1980, and I hope I'm not giving my age away, but when I,
yeah,
when I came out of the military in 1980, you know, I went to school. I went with my GI Bill. I was able to get my AA degree, and I got my bachelor's degree, and I went back to get my master's degree. And that helped me from the standpoint of my major was communications, and I actually really wanted to be a radio DJ. You know, I just thought that was the be-all to be-all, you know, to be a radio DJ. But as time went on and getting married at an early age and having children, I realized that being a radio DJ, it's not something that I could do right now. Right now, I got to get a job so I can start supporting my family. So that's what I did. You know, I got a job with Internal Revenue Services, worked for the government for about 15 years, and left there and went into the private sector. And then that's when I started writing.
Okay. My mother worked for the IRS for 30 years. And yeah, she by the time she left, she was the president of the IMA, which is the biggest accounting organization in the country.
Oh yeah,
she was
cool.
Yeah, so you know, and she also, you know, she went to school, she went to school pretty late in life. I think she was 27 when she first started going to college. And by the time she left the job, she already had, she had three doctorate degrees.
Okay, all right for her.
So that's all right, you know. I'm pro education. How long were you in the military?
You trying to count up my age?
Okay, got to.
I went into the military at 4.
Anyway. I hear you. You don't want to give that away, huh? I hear you. Nothing to be ashamed of.
Well, no. I was 18. I was 18 when I went into the military.
I hear you. But I'm saying, how long have you been there? I was in the military myself.
Well, I did my supposedly 6 years. You know, back during that time when I went in 1970 something. what happened is that when you went in, you know, if you weren't drafted and you were to go in, every man has to give 6 years of your life to the military. And you can do that three non-active. You can do four active, two non-active. And when I went in, it was originally for 4 years active and 2 years non-active, whereas I would be in the National Guard those last 2 years.
Uh-huh.
But just before my third year was up, I had come down on the levee to go overseas. And I was surprised because the overseas assignment was to send me to Honolulu, Hawaii. And I thought, well, in order for me to go, I would have to extend my term to the whole 6 years. And thinking that I would never have an opportunity to go to Hawaii, I thought, well, why not? Let me go ahead and spend my last 3 years in Hawaii. So when I got out, I owed Uncle Sam nothing. You know, I didn't have to worry about National Guard, you know, something you got to do once a month. You know, I didn't want all that. And besides, I thought I would never have an opportunity to go to Hawaii to begin with. So I thought, oh, well, this is great. I'll go ahead and I'll do it now. So that's what I did.
Okay, sounds fantastic. Fantastic. I was in the military myself. I went in at 21. I was after I graduated college, I went in and I did, I think it was 7 years altogether.
Oh, wow.
I was in the Big Red One, which is I was a Ranger.
Okay.
So basically a killer. So I was right down my alley.
Exactly.
So but it was nice. I spent most of my time in Kansas, Fort Riley, and it was nice. I really enjoyed it. It was some of the best time of my life, actually. You know,
I say the same things, and I tell young brothers all the time. You know, going into the military, you know, of course, you know, you may be concerned about wartime, you know, all of that, and I understand that. You know, but it was the best, one of the best 6 years of my life, you know, because the experiences that I've had and the things that I've been able to do and see in the process, as well as it's afforded me an education.
That's right. And education. I mean, I tell these young brothers all the time, I mean, the military paid for your education. It's a nice, easy way when you can't afford it. You get a job, you get housing. I mean, you know, you get all of that, food.
I know. Not only did Uncle Sam pay for my education, they also paid me once a month to go. You know, so, I mean, you can't beat that.
Exactly. You got a paycheck to boot.
Yeah.
You know, you cannot beat that. You know, that was one of my reasons for going because, you know, I felt like I had to leave my mom's house. Me and my step-pops wasn't getting along too great. So one of the things I said I wanted to do was, well, the military, you know, I got clothes on my back, shelter, food, and a paycheck. That's where I'm going.
Exactly.
So that was good for me. Let me ask you, how does it feel to you to be nominated as an OG Publications King of Literature?
I'm honored, you know, just like Clever Black says, you know, it's an honor, you know, to be nominated and to, you know, be a part of, I guess, history, you know. This will continue on now as well as when we're all dead and gone, you know. I'm flattered, you know, and I'm honored, you know, and it's definitely appreciated. And it's nice to see that people who read, you know, your work not only enjoy it, but, you know, they honor you as a result of it. So, you know, that's almost as good as sex as far as I'm concerned.
If it's as good as sex to you, then you're doing it wrong.
Well, you know, I'm a little older than you guys. So, for me, it's still just as good as sex, okay? So.
I hate you. I hate my brother. All right. Is there any advice you could give our upcoming as well as struggling authors?
Well, the advice that I would give them basically is, you know, like Clara said, you know, be true to yourself. You know, I definitely believe that one needs to write what they know about, you know.
Right.
I mean, you can research and research and research and research all you want. But, you know, in reading a book, you know, you can tell whether or not somebody researched this information or whether or not they actually experienced it. You know, there's definitely emotion in words that comes from experience. You don't get those emotions through research, okay?
Right.
You know, but, you know, so I would tell them write what they know. I would also tell them, You know, publish your own books. You know, and here's the crazy thing. It doesn't cost as much as people think it does. You know,
right.
All you have to do is get an editor. All you have to do is get a graphic artist. You know, and they
right.
can, you know, give you a cover. They can, you know, edit your work. And they don't have to call, I mean, they don't have to cost very much. So,
right.
So take the time out and publish your own books. You can do it. You know, as a matter of fact, I live in Baltimore, and
okay.
I'm also giving some workshops on writing your own book
okay.
on March 3rd and March 10th. For the here in Baltimore, at one of the Waxter Centers here in Baltimore, you know,
okay.
and, you know, hopefully it's going to be a big turnout.
You got
but,
an address,
you know,
for that?
Do what
I'm
you
pretty
do
sure.
It
listeners might want to do it yourself.
I literally have a flyer that I can send you, and if you could post that or, you know, make mention of it, that would definitely be appreciated for those who live in the Baltimore, D.C. area. They can come out, you know, and find out what it's all about. And the best thing about it, the great thing about it, is that it's free. It's absolutely
okay.
free. It doesn't cost anything. And the workshop is from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m.
Okay.
Matter of fact, I just sent it to your messenger on Facebook. So
okay,
the flyer's there, okay?
Okay, I will post it. All right,
thank you
very much. I appreciate you including me in that.
No problem. And I just want listeners to know that, hey, you can get my books. It's on Creative Space. It's on Amazon. I can be reached on Facebook. You know, Mike Warren, Facebook. You know, check it out. It's a little different, but, you know, the read is a little different, I guess. Some people may not be comfortable with it, but nonetheless, you know, check it out.
Okay. All right. That brings us to the end of our interview. Mr. Mike Warren, author and publisher Mike Warren. Mike Warren,
thank you, Andre,
for being part of the Mastermind of the Grind Block Talk Radio Show, and congratulations on your nomination.
You.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Mike
thank
Warren.
You.
All right. After this quick intermission, we will be back with Tremaine. All right, folks?
Big Catcher Kane, big homie, what it is? I'm taking a rap straight off of these niggas. Now, everybody wanna be the kings of the South when they ain't running the damn thing but they mouth, no doubt. It's all good, y'all just stay in y'all opinion. But in the South and in the hood, it's understood. Without saying, it's a given. And ain't because of what I'm doing for a living. It's more because of what I do and how I'm living. Not to mention when I'm rapping, I'm just heard niggas feeling. And still chilling on something that's in the healing. Made provisions for the clicking, continue keeping it pimping. What the crack was in the house, the record sale through the ceiling. So say what you want and do what you please, but for fun, I shoot 22 from your shoes to your knees. I run a record label and a crew of G's, so niggas will come and look for you if I sneeze or even breathe the wrong way. You better do what the song say and be easy, else it'll be a long day.
I'm a
kid,
bankrolls in the pockets of my
jeans.
I'm a kid, pussy niggas couldn't see me in the dream. I'm a kid, top of all of your back.
Get it twisted, big. All the shots different from my clothes, existed. And still find words on my mama kitchen. I'm a one hustler. I keep the street blazing. This race don't sell. I drive them up to sell a race. Why y'all cherry picking hustlers out here slaving? Can't shit, nigga, run deep in my veins. Pump through my heart, live in my bone marrow, man. That's pimping. My game is premium like Optane. Can't tell me nothing about how that can eat. Bitch, I'm lying. Ain't gonna jerk. See me seated in the throne. Overruled other dudes like these did wrong. With a breath so demanding and an aura so strong. This outfit been represented like this for so long. I'm an emperor. You just be glad I'm working on the temple. Otherwise, I got to flip the script and listen to your temple. Disrespect us. I'm a blicker till I get the swing. Just brass knuckles. See your dental blast. Suckers in they temple. I'm a king. Money grows in the pockets of my jeans. I'm a king.
Coverage, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Set up an interview, get up in a joint.
All right. So tell me how it feels to be nominated as an OG King of Literature.
Well, I mean, you know, it's an honor. Just like the last two gentlemen said, it's definitely an honor. I'm appreciative of it. It's a joy just knowing that the readers take to what you put out there enough to where they you know, after they read it, you're still on their mind because they nominated you for something like this. So I definitely appreciate it.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty sure there are listeners out there that's, you know, they were probably looking for a publishing company. How can people submit their books to King Publishing?
Submissions are open right now. You can go to kingpublishinggroup.com and hit the submissions tab, everything. It tells you right there what you need to do. And,
okay.
You know, take it from there.
All right, so you have a website set up for that. Fantastic.
Definitely.
All right. Before you go, do you have any advice you can give our upcoming as well as struggling authors?
First and foremost, you got to set a plan. You got to have a plan, write it down. You got to make a vision board, do something. You got to put that in front of you and know what it is. Because without a plan, you're just doing whatever you want to do. But as far as writing go, you got to keep that, you know, keep the pen on the pad, keep your fingers on the keyboards, have it do it. And, you know, keep the passion in it, definitely.
Okay. That sounds legit. Well, that brings us to the end of our interview. Mr. Tremaine Johnson, publisher of Buzz Magazine, publisher, King Group. I really appreciate you calling in and being a part of Mastermind of the Grind Block Talk Radio Show. All right? And congratulations on your nomination. All right?
Definitely. I appreciate you having me.
All right, folks. That was Tremaine Johnson. Right. When we come back, we're gonna speak to Saeed Salam. All right, folks, that's Saeed Salam. So stay tuned, cause you don't want to miss this interview. All right, take care.
Recruiting suckers, Mac and Mike, and making men of them. Tears and fears for my peers, they risen. You think that it is, if not it isn't. Race for the border, my daughter could beat her banging out. Cheeks rocking, beats in her teeth, and it's time for hanging out. Gather, or rather, for my circle around out loud. Just because brothers or others could never ever rock a crowd. Is it because he's running off with the mouth? Or was he really clearly trying to play a nigga out? Nope, shut him down, the king with the crown. Cause all you wanna be is Dicky
Down.
A friend of mine asked me to say some MC rhyme, so I said this rhyme I'm about to say. The rhyme was Mecca, and then it went this way. Recollect a Mecca, mic check on a windmill skill. Mac is cats wearing Godfather hats. It's okay to parlay the 4K better. Tell her my nigga need a sweater tougher than leather. Swing another Bobby King thing and I wreck. But just like the white one, I get no respect. Money stay awake cause the other niggas are fake. From Hollis to the Beacon, know your dumb ass is leaking. CL and Run DMC, so rush it. Big time way before him, I got to touch it. Remember the faces in all types of places. Look, ma, no shoelaces. And I'm
down with the Happening, Andre? Everything's cool, yo.
All right. Tell our listeners a little something about yourself.
Saeed Salam, from the Bronx, New York. Been down in Atlanta for about 20 years.
Boo.
I'm North. I'm sorry.
I said boo.
Oh, you know the BX. Got to represent that BX borough. You know what I mean? But yeah, I've been down south for about 20 years now. I'm the author of about, I lost count. I know it's like 25 or 30 books, something like that. Probably even a couple of pen names as well.
Wow.
You know, I've been published for about 3 years now. And
you're the official king of literature, huh?
Yeah, I'm just trying to do my thing. I'm trying to get in where I fit in, you know what I mean?
Oh, you fit in all kind of crevices.
All right.
Wow. Man, yeah. That's amazing. You know, So do you self-publish?
Yeah, actually, I do self-publish. I was under a publishing company when I first came out, and when that contract was fulfilled, I went ahead and self-published.
Okay. Now, let me ask you, since you were publishing, what made you go to self-publishing?
It was a matter of economics. Being signed to a publisher, unless you're doing just crazy numbers, you're not going to really eat off of it. I mean, now I made more last weekend than I made an entire year as being under a publisher. So, you know, it's just a matter of economics. This is my career. This is my job, my livelihood. So, you know what I mean? I got to eat.
There you go. That's what I tell people, you know. I never been published myself. I came out self-published because, you know, it's about economics. And, you know, this is my only job. I don't have a job outside of being an author.
Likewise. Same here. And, you know, when it comes to writing books, you know, your name is your brand and you manufacture your own product. So why in the world would you put it in somebody else's hands to make more than you make off of it? That's crazy.
Exactly. You know, I tell people, hey, maybe I'm just greedy, but I got to get all the money. I put in all the work. Why shouldn't I get all the money?
I feel that.
Money, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I like that. I mean, 25, 30 books. You sound like you've had some very successful times. I mean, how long did it take you to get to where you at?
Like I said, I've been published for about 3 years. So when I jumped into the industry, I've been pretty much going hard since then. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So,
what do you find is the best way to sell your books?
I use the traditional Kindle and Barnes and Noble as well as paperbacks. We have a nice little paperback movement. I'm fortunate enough to have books in all the libraries all across the country, which is cool because I got family all over who's always hitting me, you know, when they find my books in the library. It's like really crazy for them. So, you know.
Okay, how'd you get your books in the library?
That was one of the caveats that came along with and published. They had the major distribution, so they was able to. So I didn't make any money, but I did, you know, get a few, get a little bit of exposure, which translates to money in the long run as long as I keep grinding. You know what I mean?
Right. Okay. Because I'm pretty sure there's listeners out there would love to know, you know, what you find is the best way of, you know, marketing your books and things like that. You're saying that you're doing Kindle and stuff like that, Amazon.
Right.
You find that's the best way to market it?
Well, I mean, as far as the marketing is concerned, I'm on, you know, the traditional, the standard social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, et cetera. And, you know, we have a little nice little movement there.
Okay.
I do a lot of flyers because I do have a paperback movement. We have a lot of flyers in the streets. We have a lot of bookmarks in the streets. You know what I'm saying? I got a team that's always putting out, you know what I'm saying, promotional material.
Okay. That sounds really positive. I mean, you really doing it. That's all right.
Hey, I'm just getting started. Trying to do the song.
Okay. But you're going hard, you know?
Oh, yeah, got you.
I know people that's in the game five, 10 years deep and not going as hard as you. So,
yeah,
you know, that's a credit to you. Believe it.
You know, everyone's situation is different, so, you know, it depends on, you know, what your situation is.
Yeah, I find that people that have regular jobs don't go as hard, you know?
Well, you can't.
Right. That's what
if you
got
to dedicate,
you know?
40 hours a week to a regular job, then, you know, it really cuts into your craft as far as writing. You don't have the time to sit down and write. I mean, if you're a full-time writer, then, you know, if you dedicated 8 hours a day to writing, which, you know, I very rarely do that much writing, but, you know.
Right. I mean, what I do is I do a lot of speaking engagements, you know.
Okay.
I find myself at different churches, libraries, seminars. I do all of that. And that's how I get my books across. I don't, you know, Amazon really hasn't been that good to me. I can say that. It hasn't been good to
me. Right.
But I do a lot of paperbacks and stuff. You know, I'll go to a church and I'll sell a good 200 books at a pop. And that one,
oh, wow.
one time, you know what I mean? So,
yes.
You know, that's how I'm making my money, you know?
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, everybody has different things they do, you know?
Right.
I hit the streets too with the flyers and all that. You know, I also do that.
Okay.
So, I mean, whatever works. I mean, it's like this. Everything, and they say everything and nothing works, because you don't
know. Yeah, do it works for you. Yeah.
Right. You don't know where your marketing is coming from. Like I said, you're putting out flyers. You on social media. You know, you got your answering system. You got your emails. You know, and you're doing all of these different things. What happens is they all work together to put your name out, because the more times people see it, then they get familiar with it. You see what
exactly,
I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's a blessing. Let me ask you this. How do you feel about being a king of literature?
Just like all the other kings said, you know, it's an honor to be recognized for your craft. You know, if you're a true author, this is a passion of yours. You know, authors are just like painters or sculptors. This is art. You know what I'm saying? We're artists. And for somebody to appreciate your art, you know, that's those accolades are... you know, tremendous. So to be, you know, recognized as one of the best in your field, you know, that's a tremendous blessing. I'm just honored.
I agree. I definitely agree with that. You know, let me ask you this: have you encountered any pitfalls in your career?
Yeah, of course. You know, nothing's been easy. You might go one direction and find a brick wall, so you have to, you know, throw it in reverse and try again. You can't stop. You know what I'm saying? Stop is not an option. So you just got to figure out what works for you. You know what I mean? And then being an independent author, self-published author with no team, you know what I'm saying? Really, you have to go extra hard. So
There you go. Do you have any advice you could tell our upcoming as well as struggling authors?
I write every day. That's the best advice I was ever given. I don't follow that as much as I should. But yeah, write every day. If you call yourself a writer, then you need to write every day. Just like if you're, you know, any other endeavor that you might be into, you're gonna have to, you know, you have to perfect your craft, and that comes by writing every day. You have to do it every day. You have to write something every day.
Right. Okay. I'll buy that. Wow. I'm just in awe. I mean, with all these books you've written, I'm definitely in awe. Let me ask you, where can our listeners purchase your books?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. I'm in several bookstores all over. Source of Knowledge, Black & Nobel. Somebody just hit me today, said they copped on a Dope Girl series from the Barnes & Noble in Philadelphia. So I'm all over.
Okay, fantastic. You seem like, even though you're saying you've been in the game about 3 years, you seem like you would have a wealth of knowledge putting out so many books. Is there a way our listeners can get in touch with you, let's say by social medias or whatever?
Oh, yeah. You can catch me on the fan page, Saeed Salam, or you can catch me on my personal page, Saeed I Got Next Salam. That's my little tagline. That's, you know, showing respect for all the veterans out there that's doing the thing that, you know, that laid the groundwork for all us coming up. You know what I'm saying? I'm respecting that this is time, but, you know, I got next. So.
There you go.
Eat now.
There you go. Tell them, move out the way.
Yeah. Go and eat now, because I got next. And I'm hungry.
There you go. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our interview. Thank you very much, Tremaine Johnson.
Thanks.
And I just want to congratulate you on your nomination as the King of Literature. All right?
I appreciate it.
All right. And don't be a stranger. Call back.
No doubt.
And you'll definitely be a friend to the show, because I'm pretty sure there's lots to learn. There's lots to talk about. All right?
That's what's up. Appreciate having me.
All right. Tremaine Johnson, everybody. All right. That brings us to the end of our show. Tune in tomorrow, same time, 6 o'clock. We're going to have Jamil Shabazz and Alicia Morris. All right? But until then, let me leave you with this.
Masterminds. We're going to get this album. You know, whenever we link up, my nigga, they think this shit come from outer space or something. Nigga, let's get this money, nigga. Mastermind. ROC. Double MG. Jay, I got it. I got it. Four stacks for they